Daryl Ryder joins us right now. He's brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. He has good taste, and he joins us right now. Hello, Daryl.
Good morning, guys.
Let's start Gardo's first. Are you mad at Terry Francona?
No, absolutely not. Good for him.
Didn't think you would be.
No, when I left that press conference a year ago, I had a feeling he'd be back sooner rather than later. He just needed to get his health in order, and I think he did all he could do here in Cleveland, and it was, you know, time for everybody to turn the page. So good for him. A little surprised he picked Cincinnati, but he's a big reason why the Guardians are in the playoffs this year. He's a big reason why the organization, and I posted this last night on X, to me, his legacy is that he finally got that organization out of the Mark Shapiro doldrums of pouting about being a small market and, oh, we can't compete and we have to be like the Florida Marlins and, you know, maybe once every 5 years we can get in the playoffs and, you know, maybe something good will happen. I mean, he completely, you know, changed the outlook and the attitude and the approach of that organization into, hey, you know what? Yeah, we're a small market team, but we can still win. And they won a lot under Terry Francona, and they came very close to winning it all. So good for him. Good luck down in Cincinnati, and can't wait for the Ohio Cup next year. I can't believe I just said those words, Kent. Can't wait for the Ohio Cup.
Good.
Daryl, do you change your stance if Carl Willis is plucked off the bench?
Is Carl Willis the Guardians' Bill Callahan? Answer the question.
Yes, he is. He might be.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is some tough talking, Daryl Ryder. Continue.
Hey, Carl's one of the best in the business, man. And, this organization, its strength has been pitching. And, they've not had to spend the big markets spend on their, on their pitching. They develop it well. And I think Carl Willis has a big, big, big hand in all that.
Daryl Ryder brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Final Guardians question, is tomorrow a must win?
No, but you'd like to get off on the right foot, and especially with Detroit being the hottest team in baseball right now, you want to get that series started off with a 1-0 lead and hopefully dispose of them as quickly as possible. But my gut tells me this thing's going to go 5 games.
Wow. 5 games means we would see Skubal twice. I know Ken wondered, are we a little too worried?
Lima's hiding under the stairs. He doesn't want to see him once.
Yeah, are we too worried about him? What do you think? They've matched up against him only once this year in all those games. They did get, 12 hits?
Ten hits. They hit him 10 times.
They did not score.
They only brought in one run.
Yeah, only scored one run, but he's clearly been the best starter.
Yeah. Really, my only concern about the Guardians going into this isn't so much the pitching. It is the offense. And they've had basically a week off now, and I'm just worried that their rhythm and timing and everything might be off a little bit, and it would take them a game or two, or hopefully not three, to get their rhythm again. This has been a very up-and-down offense this year, and I would say that's really the weakness of this team, is some of the inconsistencies that we've had with this offense and scoring runs. So, I like their chances, no question about it. They've had a great season, but the offense has to start swinging the bats right out of the gate starting tomorrow.
All right, Daryl, first, are you sick and tired of hearing about the term rust when it comes with Deshaun Watson in this offense? I know I thought he was good on Sunday, but, I mean, that was a week ago now. But I'm hearing about rust. I'm like, man, come on. That's enough of this. We're 5 weeks into the season. You're 1-3. You're trying to save the damn thing. Let's go. Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, the excuses are over for me. This season is about performance. That's why I've been asking guys this week about just basically what's going on. This is a veteran team. This is not a young team. This is not a bunch of guys that are just trying to kind of find their way here or figure out the NFL. This is a veteran team. A lot of money has been spent on this team. It's the most expensive offense in the league, and they can't do squat. So, just about every statistical category, they're in the bottom third. You know, they're like 24 and below, and that's just unacceptable. That's just the way it is. And as far as Deshaun Watson, the excuses are over as well. Okay, your offensive line is banged up. You're under pressure. You know what? The great players find ways to make the plays in spite of that. Now, in fairness to Deshaun, he hasn't had a lot of help from his receivers. The Browns lead the NFL in dropped passes. And again, it goes back to the self-inflicted wounds here. They're beating themselves, and that just has to stop. They didn't do that last year. I don't know why they're doing it this year, four games into this thing, but I'm really not interested in excuses anymore. They need to start winning football games. It's that simple.
How big of a help do you think Nick Chubb back in the lineup will be, and when do you think we'll see Nick Chubb?
I don't think you're going to see Nick for maybe another 2 weeks. I think the Cincinnati game, that October 20th, that's the game I have circled for his return. You're definitely not seeing him Sunday. I don't think you're going to see him at Philadelphia. But can you imagine what it'll be like October 20th? Nick Chubb runs out of that tunnel. What that atmosphere is going to be like, although hopefully people will actually go to the game if the Browns can't get the job done the next couple of weeks here. But I just feel, everyone's talking about just what the energy he's bringing by being able to practice and things like that. Well, let's see some of that energy in Washington on Sunday.
Daryl Ryder brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers. Daryl, did you watch Baker last night?
I did.
All right, what do you think?
I put it on X. I'm not going to compare his numbers to the Browns offense, but look, good for him.
No, yeah, wait a minute. You said, okay, because you said you put it on X. I'm like, well, let's hear what you got there, buddy.
Yeah, I made the fatal mistake because, again, people can't take jokes on social media.
I can't.
I did the Simpson things. I will not compare Baker Mayfield's stats to the Browns offense, and I kind of like repeated that until I ran out of characters there. But here's what folks need to understand about the Baker thing. First of all, I'm happy for Baker. Secondly, I really feel just because of his personality and how he is and how he attacks and approaches playing football, he needed to be kicked down a few times, okay? And I don't think we would have gotten the Tampa Bay Baker Mayfield here in Cleveland. We saw glimpses of it, but, he needed to become the underdog again. And also, too, I think he needed some maturation. And for that to happen, he needed to be kicked in the teeth a few times. And that obviously happened with the Browns trading him to Carolina, not working out in Carolina, not really working out, with the Rams. And then he ends up in Tampa, and, he's tasked with replacing the greatest of all time in Tom Brady. And it's worked very, very well for him. But that's why I made the joke, because I think it's a little bit of an apples to oranges comparison here, just because I don't feel like this iteration of Baker Mayfield that the Buccaneers are getting right now, I just don't think we would have seen that in Cleveland had he stayed and things worked out.
Yeah, Daryl, that it's one thing for us to say it, and we were all on record about how we felt about that situation. Basically, everybody in town was on record. But what about the front office and their decision making throughout the process?
Well, there were some. How do I want to say this? I feel like that there were some maturity issues behind the scenes. I think that's the way I'll phrase it. Setting aside the, on the field struggles, right? He had one season that was just completely derailed with the injury, and I don't know if he had to play to make sure he got his endorsement money or whatever, but it just that whole season was derailed by his injury. And then, the next year, there was a lot of stuff that happened behind the scenes that, you don't want from your franchise player, your franchise quarterback from a leadership standpoint. Just not the best example to be setting for folks within the organization. And I think that Baker learned from that experience. He was a little hard-headed. There was a moment where I think it's okay to tell this story now. There was a moment I remember where I forget which season it was, but he was receiving some counsel from a team official just about, this is how you should navigate this situation. And Baker basically told the person to go bleep themselves. And that was pretty much what he said to this person. And so when I talk about maturity, these are the type of things that, you know, I'm referencing. You know, there were people within the Browns that legit tried to work with and help Baker, and he just wasn't interested in learning and listening to them.
Well, that's pretty enlightening in a lot of ways. I mean, I think it's possible that people can mature over time. Like, I do believe that he's a more mature quarterback than he was then. Probably overall person as well. I mean, he's married, he has a kid. That tends to mature a man. And maybe the situation, I think if he didn't try to make that tackle, I think he's probably still here. I do think that ownership liked him very much, as much as people don't want to believe that. Daryl, moving to this football team, David Njoku, Sunday, yes? Yes?
I'm leaning that way. You know, the reason he didn't practice yesterday, this is all part of the process and the management. If he doesn't play Sunday, I'll say this. Why didn't you put him on injured reserve? Right? This will be the, third or fourth week that he's missed. Yeah. So I hope we see him Sunday. They need him desperately Sunday. If not for anything else, Ken, then to help block up front.
That would help. Miles Garrett, he's dealing with an injury. What's the pitch count on him?
Yeah, he was a little over just under 60%, I should say, last week. The week before, he was closer to 50%. So I think that's a positive trend there, Ken, that he played a little more.
Daryl, is that a big reason why, like Jim Schwartz said yesterday, they're 1-3 defense, and we're wondering maybe are they not as good as we thought they would be? And Miles Garrett's kind of been a part-time player.
Well, they're a 1-3 defense because they haven't tackled well. You know, which has led to them not getting off the field as much. It's led them to giving up more yardage than they did a year ago, led to them giving up more points than they, you know, did a year ago. So I feel like it's a domino effect there, Anthony. So, you know, and Jim Schwartz, he doesn't hold back. He tells you what's on his mind, and he's not afraid to not be diplomatic about things. And he basically said that they have to get their stuff together and, you know, start playing up to expectation. And that's not about Myles Garrett being a part-time player. You know, Myles Garrett not on the field doesn't excuse guys for missing tackles.
If they lose this game on Sunday, what happens?
Another classroom full of kids is going to be in tears because of you.
I didn't guarantee anything to anybody this week.
That's a cheap shot.
I do feel like this is the classic, which is not very good for the Browns' future because it feels like a classic situation with the Browns, and classic isn't good, where everybody's losing their mind, myself included.
Yeah.
And everybody's excited about Washington, and they just go in there, and Washington sucks up the room, and they win.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, and I think I said this with you Monday, right? I mean, it'd be the most Browns thing ever.
I think you did, yes. Yes.
You know, these are two games. They just lost. They're coming off two losses against inferior opponents that they should have beaten, right? And then the most Browns thing ever would be they go to Washington, and they shut down and beat the hottest quarterback and one of the hottest teams in the league to start the season, and Jaden Daniels. And to your point about Rust and Deshaun, that's why I'm done with the excuses. You know, this kid came out of college, and he's setting NFL records. He's got an 82% completion percentage. And, you know, I mean, he's 7 touchdowns and whatnot. So believe it or not, it is possible to, like, step on the field after having time off and perform. See Joe Flacco. Did it again last week for the Colts. So, they need to go to Washington. They need to win this game because if they fall to 1-4, you're in for a rough morning Monday.
Yeah, but I'm starting to get used to rough mornings, which isn't good. Daryl, thank you very much for the time. All the best. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Hopefully it'll be a happy conversation. If it's not happy about the Browns, at least hopefully it'll be happy about the Guardians as well.
That's what I was going to say. Hopefully we have some good October baseball to get us through these turbulent times.
It's been a different fall, man. Daryl's been carrying around a flamethrower lately. I love it. Daryl, take care, buddy.
You bet. Have a great weekend.
The great Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We got thoughts coming up on the Guardians soon. However, Lima, you circled this. I want you to get to the surface, and then I want to dig underneath the surface. Go, what's your thoughts?
So over the course of the week, I kind of got more and more upset about this. On Monday, we had a lot of stuff to be upset with.
You've been in a lather over this. Come on, let's hear it. Get red-faced and mad. Let's go.
Well, we had a lot to be upset with Monday, so probably should have made a bigger deal about the fact that they potentially left 3 points on the board. We get what happens. If you miss the field goal, you're spotting, you know, you're spotting the Raiders with great field position. But again, it's in a dome. You have the excellent opportunity in a game. You can't find points except for the scripted drive. You can't get into the end zone. You keep missing an extra point, which was bad, and maybe you could make the argument, well, he missed the extra point. But that almost tells me if he misses an extra point, like he's due for a good one. Uh-huh. And 50-yard field goals in this league, what would it have been officially? Was it 58? 58. All right, 58. Obviously, no gimme, but he had already made one from deep, and he's obviously got the leg to do it. And every week, I mean, I'm watching coup of the Atlanta Falcons every week with the game on the line, just calmly stepping up and hitting 50-yarders. This whole league and kicking has completely changed.
Gone straight to hell.
This truly does seem like a scared move by the Browns. And for them to all be on the same page there, that is a little bit alarming because you're going to have many more moments where they have to make decisions like that. And what does it tell you about their state of their psyche, their state of affairs, with where their mind is on this football team right now?
We've made jokes about looking into a sheet, a play sheet, and going, the answer ain't in there, bud. You keep looking. It ain't in there. I think that they might be looking for an answer that might not be there. If they can't execute and they can't do it, fine. Like, I brought it up to you. It does concern me, again, that you go back to 2021. Where were they able to score? When they've struggled, they've been able to score where? The first drive of the game. And we always make the same remark. Well, why can't they just script the whole game? Which is partly, some people are serious, but mostly it's a tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
It's a joke. What you should really be concerned about is that your teams that you're playing, I'm sure they respect you to some degree because you were a former playoff team, which that seems miles away right now, and also you're a professional football team. But it's not the same respect that they have as others because they're just unlocking you. And they're figuring out what you're doing right, and they're figuring out what they can figure out, and they are going to be able to neutralize you. And we're seeing it in every single one of these games. Down the field score, down the field score, down the field score, down the field score. That's it. A field goal here. If you get them turned over, except one got called back and they were still dancing. And the other one, if there was that, if there wasn't a terrible holding call, it would have went a lot. It would have went a lot better for them. But you've had these spots where the best type of offense you've had over these first four games is Deshaun Watson running around.
Yes.
Like, I wanted to protect him kind of the way it started in the Jacksonville game because it's like, man, you lose him, you're not going to be able to make lightning strike twice. And I'm thinking, now in the third quarter, late third quarter, I'm reaching a point of desperation where I'm saying, go.
Just go.
Go.
Run. Get your first down.
Explore the space. Go ahead. Be unencumbered.
Go west, young man. Go east, young man.
Whatever way you have to go.
South.
Because that's the only way they can move the ball down the field is him stepping through the pocket, looking downfield, and thank God he's kept his eyes up. That's why I had to defend his play against Las Vegas, and I defended his play to a degree, against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Because if he's doing that, for the love of God, maybe if they can put together some semblance of a game plan and these guys get on the same page, then maybe they'll be able to move the ball down the field. Which brings me to another point that I'm not comfortable sharing. It's not that there's too many cooks in the kitchen. Maybe not yet. But if I'm a cover band, if I'm just a cover band, like there's the Pink Floyd band, Wish You Were Here. They were always on the Cruise On In and Dance Party in Maslin back in the day, right? I think they're still around. Wish You Were Here. You can be a really good cover band. You can sing like no one else can sing. You're still not Pink Floyd. You're still not that. And is Kevin Stefanski the cover band for a Ken Dorsey offense? Now, I don't know. Maybe the Ken Dorsey offense is winger and no one wants to hear a winger cover band. I don't know. But I'm just, I knew what I was going to look up. I'm just looking at it right now thinking, are you calling another guy's offense and that offense isn't that good? And are you struggling to figure out what's right in that offense? And should the guy who they threw under the bus in Buffalo, mm-hmm. maybe it was right to throw him under the bus and maybe you should just let him call the damn plays and maybe you got too much on your plate, sir. It's making me wonder things because when you're 1-3, you start to wonder crazy things.
Well, remember this too. You want to talk crazy things. Now, all of a sudden,
winger wasn't that bad.
In the recesses of my mind, I'm like, hey, remember when Albert Breer got roasted by Browns fans when he was talking about Alex Van Pelt going to his new team. And, you know, actually, Alex Van Pelt was the glue that kind of kept everything together in Cleveland. Well, the glue is gone, and now we have the worst offense, like, historically in the last 20 years.
But,
I mean, we scoffed because none of us thought that it was Van Pelt. But we're not in those meetings. We're not there every day, and we don't know how that communication is. What is their system of communications and delegation from a head coach? Why all of a sudden does the offense look like this gobbledygook of three different eras of Browns football as they're trying to figure out what Deshaun can do and what he can't do?
I don't know. I can't tell you. And it's obviously a frustration for everybody involved. And I'm just looking for answers right now, guys, because this weekend, I know we're focused on the Guardians, and rightfully so. They deserve it. They're in the postseason. Postseason teams deserve the most attention. We've been giving them the most attention today. But you have one team right now this weekend trying to extend their season. You got one team, they're trying to save their season. You go to 1-4, that's it. What am I saying about the Bengals? As an outsider about the Bengals, if they lose to the Ravens, I'm thinking, that's it. You guys are done. And you guys can figure out what you're going to do with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Zach Taylor and whatever you guys want to do with your defense and your pass rush. Okay, what do I say about the Browns if we're 1-4? I can't sit there and say a bunch of things that I don't mean. Like, if we're 1-4, it's like, all right, we're done. Now we're figuring out what to do with Deshaun Watson. If he's good enough to keep, if he plays bad enough that you could have an historically bad dead cap space, what to do with Kevin Stefanski. And, you know, rightfully so, I think that Andrew Berry's a good guy, but you gotta examine that. You got to look under the hood of that and go, where are we at here? Why can't we draft good wide receivers? Why... Your defensive backs have been pretty good. You know, why have we made the moves we've made, and are you cut out for this job for the future? These questions are going to be raised after Sunday afternoon if you don't go out there and win.
Everybody that takes in this league, we know how quickly things change. I mean, look at Philadelphia. Look at how they were the toast of the town, the drafting, the organizational stuff, their coach, who everybody made fun of at first. Then he's winning a ton of games, and now... A year and a half
later,
he's
on the hot seat.
He is on the hot seat. I didn't know if he'd even make it through the bye week.
Exactly.
As we get ready to play them. Things change so quickly. And think about where our organization was and our coaching was in December. How we were feeling about all those things. And thinking about the hits of DeJuan Jones and Martin Emerson. And now you got people going, this is some of the worst drafting in the NFL over the last 5 years. Like, how quickly the conversation changes.
Because, like, they can show flashes, but they have to be consistent. And when you don't have consistent play, and flat out, guys, if you're just losing, it's going to make everything look worse. And you're losing. So now I'm thinking, well, what, you know, we have Quentin Jefferson. He's good at getting to the quarterback, except, you know, he's a defensive lineman, and we're getting gashed against Las Vegas. All right, Martin Emerson was good against the Vikings. Well, all right, what happened? Like, I can't anoint him yet. So, like, JOK has been the most consistent over this period of time. I got nothing to say against JOK. Well, I would hope over the course of a draft you're going to get a couple of guys that can stick. I mean, there are guys who are dotted with previous drafts of general managers who have been fired that stuck around. Andrew Berry did not draft Joel Bitonio, and he's been the gold standard at guard for a decade now. Like, there are good draft picks out of other poor drafters. And we're getting to a point now where if you lose this game, like... I thought we got thrown under the bus yesterday on social media. I'm like, you guys told us about these mock drafts out here. And I just wanted to make a point that there's not a chance in hell that if you have Deshaun Watson on this roster, you're never going to draft Shedeur Sanders. So you could throw that stuff right out the window. But I think even if they were to have a cap hit or anything like that and got rid of him, I don't think that they would take him. But I thought we got thrown under the bus. But now that's going to be a conversation in earnest. And do you trust the guy drafting in the first round? Especially when we're saying, well, you know, maybe there's not as much first-round talent as we've seen. It all depends on who's sending that message. Like, there's so much at stake. And it might still be at stake in a couple of weeks. If you lose to the Eagles, you end up 2-4. If you lose to the Bengals, you end up 2-5, whatever. But, man, you go to 1-4, that's your goose is cooked, man. We're talking big picture stuff. We'll be upset about the loss on Sunday and Monday morning. Hopefully we're talking about a Guardians win. I can tell you guys right now, it's going to be a lot of big picture stuff coming in, and rightfully so. Because that stuff, when you go and you make that change, and you brought it up like, maybe Kevin wasn't very thrilled with having to let go of Alex Van Pelt. You bring this in, you bring in Ken Dorsey, you make the changes you've made with your staff, and you're not getting the results, there's only so many places you can look. And damn, man, it seems like we just walked through one door, and all of a sudden the team feels like they're ancient. Let's go to the phones. Fred and Maple Heights, you're first up on the Fan.
Hey, man. Hey, look, I've always been a big Browns fan. I got to say, you took that was the exact thing to say, man. It looked like three of the previous Browns teams out there playing all in one unit, man. Let's just be real. I wake up in the morning sometimes, and I just like listening to y'all, man, because every week we find ways that we should be able to beat teams that if we really, really look at it, we know, come on, man, we can't beat. We going 1-3 with the Commanders, with the Eagles, and with Cincinnati. I'm going to give Cincinnati maybe the W because we pretty much had their number for the most part since Ocho Cinco left them. But let's be real, man. We wasted Nick Chubb's time. We wasted Myles Garrett. Denzel Ward then had more concussions than Pro Bowls. I mean, let's look at the whole thing. It's a whole cluster, man. I think they said we're going to win, what, 5 games or 6 games this year? Numbers don't lie, man. I mean, like, what is this going to take? A miracle. Unless James Winston get in there.
You know, we were catching
heat. Be real, Fred, man.
What did you think? I'm not arguing with you, by the way. Sounds like I am. What did you think they were going to win this year? How many games?
This year, every year is the same thing, bro. I get them five or six games, and then they flame out, and they sporadic games. They're not even consistent. We don't come out winning the first five and fall off. We win games that don't matter. Another thing I'm pissed off about.
Fred, I know you're mad, but get back to the nature. How many games did you predict that they were going to win?
I was hoping for them to win at least 6 games. You know why I say that?
Holy Chautauqua.
Because I'm a realist. You know why? I'm not saying you guys do, but I don't get paid to have a non-biased opinion. I'm going to give you people.
Well, I am biased. I'm from here. I'm not going to sit there and deny that to anybody. But my point is, like, we got called out for being what? Unrealistic. Fred, stay with me. We were called out for being unrealistic about the expectations, and I'm thinking, wait, they're the ones with 11 guys making over $10 million. You have one of the most expensive offenses in the NFL. You can't even put out 20 points a game, but going into the season, you have all that. I'm not supposed to hold you to expectations of making the playoffs. I think I'm trying to hold you to a standard, and I got yelled at for holding them just to the playoffs. And now we're talking about them winning 6 games? Sorry, Fred, go ahead.
I missed that part, and I feel for you on that. But I'm just saying, look, this boiled down to coaching. This coaching ain't – Jerry Jeudy talking about he can't run routes, man. We got players out there that's
exhausted. Who traded for him?
There we go. There we go. Who keep writing all these blank checks? There we go. We got to keep looking at this. It's a power struggle. It's internal. You could tell by the team. I think, too, another caller made a point. I think that when Deshaun is out there, man, I'm going to be real. When Deshaun is out there, I think everybody on the team just go, yep. We're about to lose this one today, man. So I ain't about to go hard and risk injury like that because they know what they about to get out of him, man. When you go to a restaurant that doesn't serve healthy food, you know you're liable to pack on the pounds, right? Yeah. So don't blame yourself when you start becoming a tubby. So look at Deshaun. We keep throwing him out there. We throwing him out there, and we getting the same results, and we expecting organic, healthy results from a guy, man, that don't look like he want to be there, man.
Fred,
He got the bag. He ready to go home, man. Well, he got the diamonds.
Boy,
he got
the interesting.
Girl.
That's interesting.
Come on, man. He ready to go.
Now we're doing a Prince song here. Fred, thank you very much for the call. 216-474-0092. By the way, Jerry Jeudy isn't even in my top 10 of problems right now. Him admitting he was tired, that sucks. But on-field performance, I'm fine with that. But, yeah, this is – guys, they go to 1-4. I can't stop that call from happening over and over and over again. And you guys are all going to think that way. Yeah, I was trying to hold them to a standard to get into the playoffs, and I got people outside of Cleveland telling me and I'm nuts. And I'm going, all right, well, what am I saying about Cincinnati if they lose? If I'm saying that about the Bengals, I have to say the same about us if we lose to the Washington Commanders on Sunday. At least they'd have a good loss, technically, quote-unquote, against Baltimore. Folks, Mitch is hosting the Guardians postgame coming up tomorrow after Guardians-Tigers game one. He's hosting with Jake Volnick. We're going to be talking some baseball. Mitch, I have a question for you.
I heard you.
You weren't going to respond? It's a radio show. Are you going to respond?
Yes.
Thank you.
Not responding to this either.
The show is going to be fantastic. You're going to call in and go, Mitch, what happened in inning five? And he's going to go.
Oh, now he's mad.
Oh, he's mad. Mitch, do you believe that the Guardians need a deep postseason run to ensure Jose makes the Hall of Fame?
It certainly would help because he's been arguably.
Certainly would help is not the answer. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. And tell me why.
Well, because other than Ohtani and Judge, he's probably been the overall all-around best player in Major League Baseball over the past, what, 5 to 6 seasons? And if you get a run like this, it adds to not only your Hall of Fame candidacy, but your legacy, especially playing for one team, which helps.
I don't want to risk anything with him. He's been, I believe he is a 5-time All-Star. I think he's finished in, no, 6-time All-Star now, right? He has finished in the top 5 in MVP voting, I think, 4 times. This will be his 5th, if I'm not mistaken. His postseasons have not been terrible. I know that we were very critical of Francisco Lindor while he was here with postseasons. His postseasons have not been terrible. They haven't been, he hasn't been Reggie Jackson out there or anything.
Well, he hasn't had huge moments in a while.
No. I don't want him to get caught in the wash, though. I want to make sure he has everything. Yes.
It's going to be, if he could make a run, if the Guardians could do something World Series-wise.
That's a shoo-in.
I mean, think about the guys in this generation that he's going up against as Hall of Famers, right? Mike Trout, he's great. The best player that we had seen until Shohei, but no playoff. Absolutely no playoff, like, yes. Standout moment. Shohei doesn't have one yet.
Hasn't had a chance.
Bryce Harper has some playoff, acumen, but it would definitely help propel him. And anytime that you argue with anyone, as a Cleveland fan, when you argue with somebody else about, well, he's no Mike Trout, like, yeah, Mike Trout doesn't win. Who cares?
Yeah.
Great stats.
The guys you'd be looking at would be like Adrian Beltre, Scott Rolen, just in terms of guys right. That made the Hall of Fame that we were borderline throughout their entire careers, but they were able to play, I think, for. Was it Beltre 17 years, Roland 20? Yeah. Okay, so right now, Jose, is this his 12th or 13th year? So he just needs to keep doing this because those guys took off into the 30s. And this is when you need to start stockpiling, and he had a great season. This is exactly the type of year. Now he has to go do it again and again and again.
That 40-40-40 would have been great.
Would have been great because that would have been up there. And he got
Gosh, you're right.
He got denied a game 162. Yeah. He got denied that final game. He played in 158 games this year, but he got denied an extra opportunity. That's why we were joking, hey, can they count his stats in the simulation? If he's hitting off Bart Swain, can they count that and put it up on the list? So that's kind of what we're monitoring right now. And the overall accounting stats, I mean, 255 career home runs. You know, that's why he has to do this for another 5 years. That's why he needs to, his base running helps him big time, no doubt.
Yeah, I don't want there to be a question. Like, if they win the World Series, he's a shoo-in, that's it. Because of the 76 years, because they don't do anything without, I can't imagine them winning a World Series and he's just 0-for-4 every time he goes up there.
Comes into his favor then, right?
I'm sorry?
The hometown discount comes into his favor. If they win it and he's the guy that said, I'll take less to be here because this is where I want to be. He's the face of the franchise.
Yes, but if they just lose this series, then it's like, well, when's the next time you're going back? Can we do it? I think a lot of Guardians fans are shaking their heads saying, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. You got to make sure of these things. You want, because I think of two guys. Omar's a bad example anymore. I have to use him for baseball because the accusations, and he's done every interview he can to dispel any of that stuff. I don't know where the truth lies. But I think that that's part of it that has knocked that vote way down. But before, he was known as a compiler. And I'm like, well, you're playing a tough position for a long time. It was the same thing with Clay Matthews. You're playing a very tough physical position for a long time. That should stand for something, not just being a compiler. It wasn't like he was sitting on benches for the last 10 years of his career. He was a great ball player. And Clay Matthews was a great football player. And for Jose has done a lot of great things, but I do think he gets caught up in judge. Ohtani. Tra. Ramirez. Bobby Witt. Ramirez.
He's always getting overshadowed. I mean,
it's an overshadow.
It's Philip Rivers, right? It's what happened with Philip Rivers in the NFL, and that's why we're always debating whether Philip Rivers will have a shot. And listen, the playoff moments are a big deal. You do have, you know, for a guy who's not going to have the big home run totals over the course of his career, he's got to have some postseason stuff to really have a shot here. You know, I'm just comparing. You brought up Bryce Harper. I'm just comparing, and it's not even close. Like across the board, on base, plus slugging, and
yeah,
it's not
now,
even the
difference
same.
Between them. Obviously, is Bryce Harper was the number one pick, and he's one of the few baseball number one picks that you knew about.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in high school, and people were talking about him.
Yeah,
nationally, Jose's come from out of nowhere seemingly and turned into, you know, the franchise's cornerstone.
Yeah, he's.
But you're right. He's got to do something in this playoff to separate himself from his contemporary.
I'm surprised. I thought I'd get a lot of pushback on that. That people thought he was already in. I'm surprised. I'm glad you guys feel the same way I do.
Love
clearly,
to say he's already in, but
you can't guarantee it.
Hasn't told me that yet.
Not with voters. You can't guarantee it with them. Who knows what they're going to be thinking? I'd like to think that since.
I mean, eventually those voters are going to
age out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to think with them aging out, but who knows where our tastes are going to be, with writers' tastes are going to be, who are voting for the Hall of Fame in 10 years or 20 years. I don't know what they're going to look at. And if it's. I would like to think that the people who write about baseball now and for the future are more in tune with baseball. Because that's one of the criticisms of the Heisman Trophy. I think that there's people, they watch one game, that's it, because they cover that team. And then everything else is hearsay, and they might get a chance to watch bowl games, but by that time, you're done. So that's it. Or conference championship games. But by that time, basically, people's minds are made up. You hear things, you can get a push going. That's why I have a hard time believing Travis Hunter will win it. But that's a different story for a different day, even though I think that he should win it.
I've got Harold Fannin Jr. as my number one in the Heisman.
He won't shut up about Harold Fannin Jr.
Number one PFF ranking in all of college football.
I bet former McKinley Bulldogs, too. I like the pups, but I mean, Lord almighty, you won't shut up.
He's the best player in college football right now, according to PFF.
He's the best tight end in college football.
No. Number one PFF score.
Wait a minute, he's higher than Travis Hunter?
Yes.
Okay, that's a flawed system, don't you think?
I'm a slave to PFF.
That's a flawed system, don't you think?
I have a shrine to PFF, and Harold Fannin, I'll have the call
coming
up this weekend.
The original PFF guys aren't even there.
I will fix your life right now from the earlier segment. You didn't know how you were going to balance doing the call of this Harold Fannin game versus whoever he's playing or watching the Guardians. You called him Hackren in the break. I was like, why? I'm just making that up.
I was about to say, you never know who's listening.
Reckless speculation.
But I will just send this tape over, and they can play this during the game, and you can watch the Guardians.
You won't shut up about the Harold Fannin Jr.
The highlights, I mean, what he did against Texas A&M, what he did against Penn State
on
the
road.
What did he do against Old Dominion? He had 12 catches, 175 yards.
Can I get if Harold Fannin gets a big touchdown tomorrow, can I get a Harold Fannin, the flames of the Akron defense?
What number is he?
Number zero.
All right, Joe, just circle number zero. Don't let him beat you. We're going to get away with a win here. Let's get going. Back to the Guardians. If you leave it in voters' hands, you never know what you're going to get out of it. It's not a political statement. If you leave it in the voters' hands of the Halls of Fame, I don't know what they're going to be feeling in 10 years, and it could be home runs, home runs, home runs. He hits home runs, but it's the other things that he does as an all-around ball player. I'd like to think that the writers are more in tune with the sport in the future than what they've even been in the past, but I can't guarantee that. So I need to do as much as I can, or I want him to do as much as he can to guarantee that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think he has a really good shot, even right now, just right now. But a postseason run would do a lot to strengthen it. A World Series, that I think would guarantee.
A potential knocking Aaron Judge out of the playoffs.
That would do a lot to do so as well.